From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week via Skype are VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell and Moment magazine contributor Dan Revive. Welcome, Anita and Dan.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, here are the issues. The world celebrated International Women's Day on March 8th with a theme this year focusing on the need for gender equity. The annual observance, which dates back to 1911, fights for women's rights and is a day for people everywhere to celebrate the achievements of women across society. U.S. First Lady Jill Biden recognized the tens of thousands of women and girls who took to the streets around Iran to protest for their rights as part of a large group of honorees for this year's International Women of Courage Award. The UN said that Taliban restrictions on the rights of women and girls had effectively trapped most of them in their homes, turning Afghanistan into the most repressive country in the world for women. Here in the U.S., a dozen senators unveiled bipartisan legislation expanding President Biden's legal authority to ban TikTok nationwide, marking the latest in a string of congressional proposals threatening the social media platform's future in the country. China is lashing out at the U.S. over reports that House Speaker Kevin McCarthy plans to meet with Taiwan's president on a transit stop in California in the coming weeks, adding to hostile rhetoric coming from Beijing's new foreign minister. The U.S. says it is not seeking to contain China and sees no change in relations. Israeli forces stormed into a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin on Tuesday, killing at least six Palestinian militants and the latest in a series of deadly military raids carried out in broad daylight. And Russia has unleashed a massive rocket attack that hit critical infrastructure in 10 regions of Ukraine, as military leaders have expressed determination to hold on to Bakhmut, a city that Russian forces have sought to capture for 6 months at the cost of thousands of lives. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Anita, International Women's Day was celebrated worldwide on March 8th, and U.S. First Lady Jill Biden honored lots of women, including those women and girls of Iran, with the Women of Courage Award. So how significant was this for them and for the First Lady?
Well, this was pretty huge. I mean, this is the first time that the International Women of Courage Awards have come to the White House, giving them basically the biggest stage in America, arguably. And I spoke to analysts who said, you know, these Iranian women were not obviously able to be there to accept this award and probably won't hear of it. But this is a shot in the arm for their protest movement, which, as you recall, has spanned all 31 of Iran's provinces and taken in hundreds of thousands of protesters over restrictions in Iran. So this is a big deal. I just want to add something about the other 11 honorees who I was in the room with, because they're pretty cool people. One of them is an Afghan doctor who attended high school in secret, and now she's a doctor treating refugees in Turkey. Another is Mongolia's first brigadier general, which is pretty awesome, and she looked really fly in her military uniform. And then the other is, one of the others rather, because there were 11, is a judge from the Central African Republic who refused to rewrite the constitution to let the president stay in power, earning her the nickname Woman of Iron. It was a pretty fierce ceremony, and I was really glad to be there.
I was really struck by something from the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, because as much as the accomplishments of women are being celebrated, and rightly so, he said things are getting worse for women and girls. The UN Secretary General said at this rate, the way things are going around the world, gender equality is 300 years away. What a thing to calculate. Guterres made a point of saying that the United Nations stands with women and girls everywhere. But he said that there are so many unfair aspects of life all around the world. He only named one country, Afghanistan, where he said women and girls have been erased from public life. On the positive side, he said perhaps collective action by governments and civil society leaders could help. But he said it even extends to technology, where we all know women are very able. But the UN Secretary General looked at the world and he looked at the Nobel Prize winners in science and technology. In that list, he says women represent only 3% of the winners. They're not being recognized enough. So there's still a really big problem.
So while I appreciate this perspective and I do think it's important, leave it to dudes to reign on the one day that we get as women to celebrate how awesome we are. The reason I'm highlighting this and hammering on you, Dan, about this is that part of the reason that women are not viewed as equal is because we've internalized that feeling. And I would like us to just unabashedly celebrate womanhood, girlhood, and femininity on one day. I do think that's really important. But on International Women's Day, I think it's also an opportunity to just highlight how there are so many women, women you know, not just women who made it to the stage at the White House, women you know in your life who are fighting systemic obstacles and winning every single day.
I'm with you. Let's celebrate progress. And please, let's have more.
Absolutely. Very good points both of you have made. Well, here in the U.S., the White House-backed legislation introduced by a dozen senators to give the administration new powers to ban Chinese-owned video app TikTok and other foreign-based technologies if they pose national security threats. So will this proposal get anywhere?
I think now that the White House has thrown their support behind it after, what, more than a year of kind of sitting on their hands and staying out of it, I think this is a sign that, yes, we might finally see some movement on TikTok. Just to go back a little bit about why this is such an issue, TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company with ties to the Chinese ruling party, to the Chinese government. And there's a concern about all of the data that goes into TikTok being used. So this is why this is of concern to the American government.
I was just, to tell you the truth, astounded how China became, if you will, the bad guy at a lot of government events at various levels in the past week. But if you think it's only Congress or only the House of Representatives where Republicans got the majority in the elections this past November, no. I mean, the witnesses who came from the Biden administration, so, you know, appointed by Democrats, the heads of intelligence and the FBI, when they answered questions from members of Congress, they kept saying that China is a big problem, a big threat, if you will. And then this new focus on TikTok, which is an app that so many people, mainly young people in Western countries, have on their phones to enjoy brief videos, to exchange messages. And then here's the U.S. government saying that because it's owned by China, it could be all surveillance and spying and could be dangerous. It's an amazing shift in tone. Very anti-China right now.
You're onto something, Dan. I think you're not alone in noticing that.
Yes, and also TikTok, the owners there criticized this measure. They put out a statement that said that the U.S. ban on TikTok is a ban on the export of American culture and values to the billion plus people who use their service worldwide. Is this app really about spreading American culture worldwide?
You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but what I do think is interesting is that China's also stepped up the rhetoric against the United States with the president of China, I believe it was just this month in March, making some pretty salty comments and saying that the US is trying to contain and suppress China. So regardless of what TikTok is, you know, a great place to learn dances or learn weird recipes that you really should not attempt at home, so on and so forth, this is kind of a proxy for a bigger power struggle between these two great powers.
And just to clarify, by the way, the part of TikTok that made that statement that in effect it would be bad for the U.S. or American culture to ban TikTok, that is a TikTok Incorporated that's in the United States. It's owned by China. It's owned by, you know, Chinese entities. But TikTok in the U.S. is trying to say it's independent and any information it collects on all the users is kept in the U.S. But, you know, technology experts say data, information, it just goes everywhere. It's a fascinating fight because it does touch on issues of freedom and also what consumers want to do. But if you know anything about fads in the world of technology, it could well be that young people in Western countries will move on to some other app anyway. Let's give it time and see.
Yes, and also on another aspect of China, the country is lashing out at the U.S. over reports that House Speaker Kevin McCarthy plans to meet with Taiwan's president on a transit stop in California in the coming weeks. So what is U.S. reaction to China's lashing out over this?
So first of all, the White House has stressed that there's no trip yet on the books for Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen, who is supposed to be coming to, as you said, the West Coast of the United States. They wouldn't say when I asked if they were going to send any administration officials to meet with her, but they're keeping a very studied, very careful distance. What I will say is that there was talk of Speaker McCarthy going to Taipei for a visit, kind of like his predecessor, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, did last year. And that seems to be on hold for now. And instead, they're moving the venue to California, which could be seen as maybe placating Beijing a little bit by holding it here rather than there.
Right. The get together being in the United States, if that happens. It's all very delicate right now, it seems to me. And I just want to draw one connection, if I may. We've now heard for a very long time, but I'm hearing it more in the past few weeks, that if Russia were to succeed in Ukraine, here we are just over 1 year since the invasion of Ukraine. If Russia were to succeed, that would encourage China to make a military move on Taiwan, maybe even to invade and grab Taiwan. And so U.S. officials say that's one reason that the U.S. is spending all the money, giving it all the attention, determined that Russia should be seen as the loser because of the message that would send to China.
Yeah, that's a very good point and a very big concern. And it's time now for a quick break. And when we return, Israeli troops kill at least 6 Palestinians in raids carried out in broad daylight. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issues. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell and Moment Magazine contributor Dan Revive. Well, Dan, this year has already seen some of the worst violence in the West Bank, Israel, and Jerusalem in 2 decades. Israeli forces stormed into a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin on Tuesday, killing at least 6 Palestinian militants in the latest in a series of deadly military raids carried out in broad daylight. So why does this violence seem to be getting worse?
Well, of course, on the big picture, there's the hopelessness that here we are 30 years after the Oslo Accords, in which the Palestinians were promised real progress toward having their own independent state. And Palestinians were negotiating with Israeli leaders. And there seemed to be hope 30 years ago. But over the years, things didn't get better. They got worse. Palestinians are frustrated. They want to have their independence. Israelis say they have no partners to negotiate with right now. You pretty much only get hatred from one side aimed at the other, with few exceptions. Some Israelis and Palestinians sit together, try to talk about a future of peace. But in this past period, what we had was a return to power of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu with a cabinet that is more right-wing, which means Israelis who want to keep the West Bank forever. Israel captured the West Bank of the Jordan from the country of Jordan in 1967. Israel has been occupying that land because of the Oslo Accords 30 years ago. Part of it has administration by a Palestinian authority, but really the Israelis insist on having security control. And so because of the frustration, there were Palestinians who carried out attacks against Israeli civilians, most of them in the occupied West Bank, but some attacks in Tel Aviv and elsewhere in Israel. And Israel struck back really hard. And then in Gaza, the more radical Hamas group that rules there got into the action by launching some missiles at Israel. All this took place in the past week or two. And the United States is always calling on both sides to bring down the level of violence. The U.S. has criticized Israel, even in recent weeks, for continuing to put Jewish settlers into the West Bank, adding more settlement units. and housing. But when it comes to that raid you mentioned, the raid on Jenin, thought of as a hotspot in the West Bank with a lot of Palestinian extremists who clearly are organizing armed rebellion against Israel. When it comes to that raid, the State Department spokesman said that Israel has the legitimate right to defend its people and its territory, and there's been too much in the way of terrorism against Israelis. So I would have to say that the United States is still much more on Israel's side and yet trying to keep the hope of peace alive if possible.
And just zooming out on the bigger picture here, U.S.-Iran relations are probably, I mean, I don't want to say this because they've never been great, not since 1979, but they're really bad right now. And the concern is that Iran is working to get a nuclear weapon, to develop a nuclear weapon, which is, of course, a huge concern for Israel because, you know, Iran's MO is that Israel does not have a right to exist. So this is obviously all of these tensions, both local and regional, are being watched very, very, very closely here in Washington and with great concern.
Yes, and also Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who went to Israel, is expected to reinforce the Biden administration's pleas for Israel to scale back its West Bank raids.
Yeah, the Defense Secretary Austin did say that when he met with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Tel Aviv on Thursday. But the focus of their talks was Iran and threats from Iran and trying to coordinate what the U.S. and Israel might do together.
Yes, we'll just have to keep an eye on that situation. And you mentioned, Dan, earlier Russia's war on Ukraine. Well, Ukrainian military leaders have expressed determination to hold on to Bakhmut as Russian forces encroached on the eastern city they have sought to capture for 6 months at the cost of thousands of lives. And Moscow says capturing the city would be a step towards its major objective of seizing all of the surrounding Donbas region. So at this point, what can the U.S. and its allies expect in the weeks ahead?
That's the million-dollar question. Or actually, given the cost of this war, that's the billion-dollar question, probably. I think what we can expect is a lot more heartfelt pleas from Kyiv to pour more resources from NATO into this fight. I'm really hesitant to say what the situation is on the ground. You know, from moment to moment, it's, of course, very fluid. But also, I think we have to realize that without the presence of journalists there and with objective observers there, it's really hard to say. And of course, both sides are very interested in presenting their own narrative. So I don't want to call Bakhmut settled or over yet, nor do I want to really inflate its importance at this time, because I worry that it's being used as kind of a rhetorical tool here.
Well, it's become a symbol, of course, when you have a city where the name becomes known all around the world. And obviously, Russians are pouring troops into there. Mostly, apparently, the mercenary known as the Wagner Group or Wagner Group has come into Bakhmut. So it's a test for them. According to the Western Alliance and NATO, the Russians are losing hundreds of troops every day. The Russians are losing more troops than Ukraine is losing. But still, of course, the city is being destroyed. Civilians have suffered. Most of them have moved away, and others are just, you know, barely surviving. So all of this, again, a test. So after Bakhmut, there'll be another test and another, because we have passed the one-year mark, the anniversary of the war, and Russia's President Vladimir Putin is still determined to win so that Russia can keep parts of Ukraine, so that Russia can, in effect, control Ukraine. And of course, we had Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, in the American media in recent days saying that he is determined but needs more help from the United States and its NATO partners. He's asking for advanced warplanes, F-16s from the U.S. and other Western countries. President Biden has said, no, I don't think F-16s are necessary. And what's behind that? The U.S. does not want to give Ukraine the ability to attack inside Russia, believing that would expand the war. Russia would blame the U.S. for killing Russians in Russia. And so there's a line there that President Biden and other NATO leaders don't want to cross.
And also just recently on Thursday, Russia unleashed a massive rocket attack that hit critical infrastructure in 10 regions of Ukraine. And so I know the U.S. said it's just going to continue to provide Ukraine with aid. So will the U.S. and its allies be able to continue to do this on a long-term basis?
I mean, that's up to Congress. They hold the money. And I feel like right now with this new Congress in session, I do see that there's kind of a negotiation between the administration and the Congress. There has been bipartisan progress on some issues, and the White House has changed its position on some issues where we didn't think they were going to, for example, TikTok. So I do think that there's room for Congress to come to some sort of accommodation, but I don't know what that's going to look like and if that's going to result in President Zelensky getting everything he wants.
There is concern among American politicians that this is costing a lot, that the U.S. military, you know, then will have to manufacture, you know, more to fill its stocks again. And in Congress, the whole question is being asked by many, and I hear it more from some Republicans who don't want to give the Democratic Party President Joe Biden an easy time, that all these questions ought to be raised. Maybe it's a waste of money. But on the whole, I have to say, I still see a bipartisan majority in favor of helping Ukraine, not just for humanitarian reasons, but strategically so that Russia will end up the loser in this war.
Yes, that's some really good insight that you all have provided. But it's time now to find out what is weighing on the minds of our panelists this week. Anita, what has been weighing on your mind this week?
When the world seems to be on fire like this, I return to Russian literature, which is my favorite gloomy literature. And I'm thinking today about crime and punishment and how in the year 2023, I think we assume that we've kind of got a handle on this and sorted this out. But there are two little fires going on right now. One is here in my home city of Washington, D.C., where the city council wants to put in a new crime bill that Congress is using its power to overturn. Because as we know, D.C. is not a state, and you know, Congress does have final authority over the city of D.C. Meanwhile, on the Hill, the Pentagon is resisting a call to turn over evidence to the International Criminal Court to show evidence of war crimes committed by Russians in Ukraine. I just think this underscores that the view of how we view justice, crime, and punishment is ever fluid. It's not settled, and that it's something that everybody as citizens of a democratic country has the right to take a role in shaping. You know, you can call your representatives and say, this is what I think we should do. And I think it is just evolving. And it's just sad because it's the goalposts keep moving. It's fundamental to how we write history and how we look at humanity's actions in the rearview mirror.
Well, I have to say that I've been looking at the economy and thinking, how bad will it get in the United States and other developed countries this year? Does it have to get very bad? As most of our listeners would know, the Federal Reserve, the central bank of the United States, declared that inflation is too high, that consumer prices have been rising, that the goal should be to let them rise at a nice, healthy 2% per year. But instead, inflation rose as high as 8 or 9% in the United States at one point last year. So how did the Fed, the Federal Reserve, respond? By raising interest rates, by actually making things more painful here. If it's harder to borrow money, then you're not as likely to buy a new house or spend more, you know, on that house. You're not as likely to buy a car. Borrowing money has become harder in the United States. And that extends, of course, to most countries. Interest rates went up. What is that going to do? Will unemployment really go up? It hasn't gone up much in the United States. But what about other countries? Will the Western world, I'm focusing again or on developed economies, the capitalist world, will it actually be prosperous at this time that there's a war in Ukraine that has cut off a lot of the food supply? So much food was grown in Ukraine and exported from there. Of course, fuel and oil became problems. Lucky for Europe, they didn't have an especially cold winter, so they got through this. But when are we going to feel prosperous again, that we're doing better each year? In most Western countries, people don't think they're doing better each year. Things are getting harder.
Very interesting thoughts, and we'll end the show on your thoughts. And I thank my panelists, VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell and Moment magazine contributor Dan Revive. I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to join us next week for more Issues in the News.